You are Locked On Jazz, your daily podcast on the Utah Jazz. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
It is Locked On Jazz for the 8th of January. Holy Milwaukee Bucks, what are they doing offensively? Oh my goodness. Plus, a deeper discussion on Royce O'Neal and what's being asked out of him defensively and the heavy burden our NBA players carry at all times now. It's all coming up on today's edition of Locked On Jazz. Pow! How are you? I'm David Locke, radio voice of the Utah Jazz, Jazz NBA insider. This is Locked On Jazz, your daily podcast on the Utah Jazz, giving you insight, expertise, geeky numbers, and hopefully making it way better to be a Jazz fan each and every day. Thanks so much for tuning in. Hope you've had a wonderful week. We appreciate you. Hope you're taking in this show multiple times a week as we take you through all of it. I don't know that I'll be able to get you a postcast. I didn't get it the other night. We're broadcasting out of the Zone Studios. It's so dark that I actually didn't do it the other night because I actually didn't think you'd be able to see me. I'm in a studio differently tonight because of monster trucks, so maybe I'll get that out for you tonight after the Jazz play the Bucks. But oh my gosh, the task tonight, this is ridiculous. The Bucks are absurd. They're averaging 1.2 points per possession. Their offensive rating is a 120. Like, you don't do 120s for, like, periods of time. They've done 120 just to start the season. It's crazy. And they're actually 5-3, which is even crazier. Their offensive rating is a 120. The next best in the NBA so far this year is a 114.7. And then there's at 113. Okay, the league average right now is a 109, which is a little lower than where it usually is. The worst in the league is Oklahoma and Cleveland and Memphis at like 100, 102. These guys are 11 points off the standard deviation of the median. 11 off the median. It's ridiculous. Compare it. The next best is 5 points per 100 possessions off the median, and no one's within a point of that team. Right? So the league average is 109. They're 11 points per 100 possessions better than the league average. The next best is 5 points better than the league average, and really only everybody else is 4 points better than the league average. Milwaukee is playing offense at a level that's hard to contemplate right now. They're the number one net offensive team in the league, so they're playing a little defense too. And it's just across the board. Like, the biggest thing they're doing is getting out and running. Our transition defense has not been good this year. We'll talk about Royce O'Neal and look at a bunch of other things, but the fact is that we're allowing about 1.2 points per possession in transition, and last I checked on Cleaning the Glass, I think we're about 26th or 27th in the league in defending transition. These guys get out in transition 23% of the time. That's astronomically high. They're the best half-court team in the league. They're never in the half-court. So Milwaukee is just going to thrust it down our throats all night long in transition. And we better be really ready for that. They're averaging, according to Cleaning the Glass, 1.3 points per transition. And they're in transition the most of any team in the league. They're the number one or two half-court team in the league. And they're, depending on which metric you use, and they're there the least of anyone in the league. And then when they are in the half court, they're just generally good at everything but posting up. They're a great spot up team. They're a good pick and roll ball handler team. They run about 8% of their offense in isolation, according to what I looked at. They're the best isolation team in the league. Their pick and roll ball handler's pretty good. I mean, these guys are just ridiculous right now. So here we are, scuffling, coming in on the wrong side of confidence against a team that is just rocking it. And they're going to and they're going to spread the floor. Well, they're going to run. Then they're going to spread the floor, drive, drive, drive. Because what's so interesting about them is you actually dig into their offensive actions a little bit, and they run because, now part of this is a little misleading. When I did the data at first, I you're getting a little bit of the me being like, oh my gosh, this is incredible. And then I dug in a little bit more and was like, oh, it's not as incredible. It's still interesting. Because they're in transition so much, they run the fewest like actions in the league. They run the fewest pick and rolls, and they run the fewest. So I went through much of the night prepping thinking, wow, they just clear out, go one-on-one, and Bud's not changing anything up. The real story is they just get out and run, which is not easy to do. That's just got to be kind of part of who you are and your culture and what, you know, and you know, Mike D'Antoni used to say the way to get them to run is to make them not have anything to think about. Then they don't worry about it. What's so potent about them is their catch and shoot numbers. DiVincenzo, 53%. Brooke Lopez, 46%. Brayden Forbes, 42%. This is in order of attempts. Chris Middleton, 50%. 50%. Effective field goal percentage, 73% on catch and shoot. Drew Holiday, 43%. Pat Connaughton, who I don't think is playing, 53%. DJ Augustine, 44%. Bobby Portis, 41%. DJ Wilson, 40%. Giannis, 10%. Sam Merrill, 2 for 3. Have to mention. So Giannis has got the ball in his hands in the half court. We're going to have Rudy guard him, is kind of what we've done in the past. Rudy's our best isolation defender. And they're going to, he's going to be surrounded, and every guy on the roster and every guy out there shooting over 40% on catch and shoot threes. And then he goes to work and starts bumping the back Rudy and just leaving Rudy on an island. Like, I don't know what else you're supposed to do. They're great. Last year, we did some interesting things. We really gave them, I thought we played some great games against Milwaukee. We obviously got the Bojan Bogdanović game winner. Giannis goes for 50 in one of them. We had the game in which we had Rudy guard Giannis. So we've done a lot of different things. If we actually look at last year in the 2019-20 season, the player who guarded him the most, of course, is good old Royce O'Neal. Giannis went 7 of 15 shooting when guarded by O'Neal. Then we had actually Jeff Green guarding him the second most. He shot 53%. When Rudy guarded him, he only went 3 for 7, but he did go 2 for 2 from 3. Donovan, 2 for 5. Tony Bradley, 4 of 7. Bogdanović, 0 of 2. That was last year. The year prior, in 18-19, the guy who matched up against him the most was Rudy. And he shot 14 of 28, 50%, 1 of 4 from 3. If you can keep, and he only shot four free throws. The second most was Favors. Favors did a great job on Giannis. He went 5 of 14 2 years ago. So 2 years ago, we had our centers guard him. Last year, we didn't. Last year, we went with kind of regular defensive approach. But man, and Giannis is now assisting on 26% of their team's buckets when he's on the floor. And Chris Middleton shooting 54%. And Drew Holiday shooting 50, 40, 90. It's crazy. I mean, they've done it to me every year. Their numbers are so great, they get to the playoffs and they don't have it. The Bucks. We're interesting because we're 17th in the league defensively right now. Some of the, but we're also 29th in the league in defending 3-point shots, and that's not going to last. The concern is we're 30th in the league in forcing turnovers again. That's hard. It's hard to be an elite, elite defensive team when you're not forcing any turnovers. Now, generally, you know, there is a real school of thought that, hey, if you can go sit in your shell and force good shots, you're probably going to be all right. And generally, that actually has turned out to be, there's some logic to that. You just try not to be 30th. That makes sense. Now, Cleveland's forcing like 20% of all opponents' plays into turnovers, and I don't think that's a particularly realistic approach for them. And, you know, Oklahoma City, Spurs, Lakers are also teams that don't force a lot of turnovers. And, you know, not all, there isn't always a correlation between being, you know, Lakers are the sixth best defensive team in the league right now, not forcing turnovers, right? Oklahoma City is the 16th team, or 18th or 17th, depending which thing you use. Atlanta's not very good defensively there. Actually, they're 15th. They're better than us defensively. So there's not a great correlation between forcing no turnovers and not good defense. It's hard to be elite. I mean, what Cleveland's doing is interesting right now. Cleveland's the number one defensive team in the league. They're 5-4 on the season. They're surprising people right now. And maybe they're onto something. And they're forcing turnovers at a historic rate. It's such a historic rate. I don't think they can continue to force 20% of opposing plays into turnovers. Toronto's next at 17. So is Indiana. Like 20% of your oppose is crazy. Last year, the Bulls under Jim Boylan were the best in the league at 18%. All right, that was an aside. Royce O'Neal's taken a lot of either direct hits or pseudo hits this week. I want to talk about kind of what really is fair to ask out of our guy, Royce O'Neal. Today's show is brought to you by my good friends over at Murdoch Hyundai. I was actually over there yesterday. My wife took the Santa Fe in for an oil change. We had a perfect experience, as we have every time we've been over at Murdoch Hyundai. They're located at 4646 South State Street, also located in Linden and located in Logan. The lineup of SUVs is fabulous. We own two of the Santa Fes. What actually happened is I didn't know a lot about Hyundai. I remember the first time I ever met with the Chases and the Murdochs at the time and got to know the Murdochs and got to know the family, great family. That's been a real pleasure because pretty good friends with Blake and enjoy our time together and our conversations. That's been a nice pleasure for me to be able to become good friends with him and get to know him as I do. And then the Hyundai, I didn't know. I mean, like, I think I was trying to make sure I pronounced it right. And once I've gotten inside on Hyundai, what I found out is just, you know, it's they've got a niche here. You know, high value, all the bells and whistles, and maybe you're not paying, you know, $70,000 for the highest luxury car, but you're getting most of those bells and whistles and safety features, and you're getting the experience at a far lower price point. It's really been fabulous. It's why we've bought two of them in the time which I've been the spokesperson for the Murdochs and for Murdoch Hyundai. The Kona is the zippy little SUV, the Tucson, as well as the Palisade is the beautiful new SUV. And if you're looking for a sedan, check out the Sonata. If you're going to head over to Murdoch Hyundai, email me first. Send me an email. Tell me what location. That always takes one little gap out of our communication back and forth. And I'll get you set up with a VIP meeting, and you can figure out whether Hyundai is the right car for you. But I'd suggest if you're in the market to at least take a second and take a look at what's out there and whether or not they can serve your needs. It's Murdoch Hyundai, located 4646 South State Street, also located in Logan and in Linden. Josh Lloyd's Locked On Fantasy Basketball is the number one fantasy basketball show in the land. Make sure you go grab it, listen to it, download it, enjoy it, and tip a hat to our favorite Aussie, Josh Lloyd, and the amazing work he does. All right, there's a lot of talk about Royce O'Neal this week. Andy Larson torched him in the Salt Lake Tribune. And Andy Larson does great work, but I didn't love his numbers on that one. The numbers are really hard to find, so I would say that, and Andy's about as good with numbers and data as you can find as there is, so I get it. Comparing Royce's defense against guards and forwards from a playoff series where the guards are Jamal Murray and the forwards are Torrey Craig and Jeremy Grant feels like a little unfair to me. But I think there's a really good discussion about what are we asking out of Royce O'Neal. So last year, Royce O'Neal spent the fourth most amount of time of any player in the NBA guarding a tier one usage player. This is from B-Ball Index. So if you look at the guys in the league who clearly are defensive stoppers, in other words, you're going to guard their highest usage player. Here's who we've got. Terrence Ferguson, who was at Oklahoma City last year, was the number one guy in the league. So Terrence Ferguson, former number one draft pick. He's actually not playing much in Philadelphia right now. He is a 6'6", 190-pound wing who's a career 40% shooter who last year, while being the number one defensive player, shot 35% from the field and 29% from three. Okay, right? Like, pretty limited. Lou Dort, who we saw up close and personal, is the number two guy. So Oklahoma City had two guys, and they just always made sure one of them was on the top usage player. That's exactly how they used him. They interchanged him. That's what they... Lou Dort is 6'3", 220, and he is just one of the more unique players in the league, and he is having a blowout season. But last year, he shot 39% and 29% from three. Okay? The next on the list is Torrey Craig. Torrey Craig might be the best athlete we have in the NBA. He played for Denver last year. He's now on Milwaukee. He won't play tonight. He's injured. He can't shoot. He's a career 32% three-point shooter. And last year, that's exactly what he thought. And he played 19 minutes a night. That's the other one. These guys all play 19 minutes a night. They're on the floor and, you know, over about a third to a little more, they're on the floor. They're guarding number one options. Okay, then Royce O'Neal, 33% of the time he's on the floor. He's guarding number one tier usage player. Next is Dorian Finney-Smith. Dorian Finney-Smith, another wing player. He's 6'7", 220. God gave him like the perfect NBA body. He just didn't give him touch. He's a career 33% three-point shooter who in his first years were 29, 29, and 31. Had kind of a breakout year last year. I don't really believe it. Shot 38%. I think I'll buy the other numbers and we'll see. Okay, so the top five guys in the league who do this also can't shoot. Except for Royce. So what the Jazz are doing is a little different with Royce O'Neal. Royce O'Neal has that same assignment every single night to guard the top guy. He happens to be shooting 45% from three. He's a career 38% three-point shooter. And the other thing is he plays 29 minutes a night. Right? The guys I just ran through, none of them are playing more than 19, 18, 17 minutes a night. Terrence Ferguson last year led that group. He played 22 minutes a night. Lou Dort, last year, while doing this, played 22 minutes a night. And Royce is playing 30 in guarding. The next guy on the list is actually Drew Holiday. Okay? That's pretty awesome. And that's when you're an all-star or borderline. Then is Chris Dunn, who is such a poor offensive player that Chicago cut him. Then's Ben Simmons, who's arguable defensive player of the year. And then, frankly, we start to dive into guys who somebody on your team has to do it. But the next group is Derek White, who's okay. Dylan Brooks in Memphis, who's been pretty good. Trevor Ariza for Portland. They really just didn't have anyone. Danny Green for the Lakers. Malcolm Brogdon for Indiana. Derek Jones was in Miami. Can't shoot. So those are the guys. Royce O'Neal, and I don't have this year's numbers yet. These are the guys who get asked to guard the number one option the most of any players in the NBA. And Royce is number four on that list. It's hard. The other thing about Royce, like, he's really good. There are not a lot of 6'4", 220-pound elite athletes that go undrafted. Now, I think he has elite skills that he's developed and figured out, and its ability to pass and handle and do those things. And Torrey Craig, frankly, did go undrafted as well, and didn't get into the NBA until he was 27 years old. So maybe that's... But when we really dig into what Royce O'Neale does particularly well, and you talk to the guys around Royce, here's what they say. They say when you hit him, it's like hitting a brick wall, and you can't move him. And that he absolutely is unmovable. But when you get him on an island against Kyrie Irving, that's not his strength. When he's on an island against Jamal Murray, that's not his strength. He's actually not a great isolation defender unless he can get up into you. And we're asking a lot out. If you actually count usage tier two, that's another 21%. So over 50% of the time Royce O'Neale's on the floor, he is guarding the one or two option on the other team. If you actually look at the numbers that we talked about, Lou Dort, Terrence Ferguson, Torrey Craig, only Torrey Craig's also that high. Torrey Craig's at 20% also. But the other guys that I mentioned from last year of Lou Dort, he only is at about 18% on those guys. And Terrence Ferguson's lower. Like, you could argue that Royce O'Neale actually guards the number one or two option more than any player in the NBA. Like Ben Simmons, Royce O'Neale, Torrey Craig. Like, that's the elite guys in the league who guard top Lou Dort. And now Terrence Ferguson doesn't play. So there's probably not a player in the league who's given a more consistently difficult defensive assignment than Royce O'Neale. And Royce O'Neale's actually shooting okay. It's also probably why on each of the last 2 years, Royce O'Neale's shooting percentage has just dove as the season goes on. Because what he's being asked to do is tough. And sure, I can pull out a bunch of isolation numbers, and they're not great. Like, you dig into the isolation defensive numbers in the NBA, and Royce gets put on an island, he has a really hard time defending. That's hard. And, you know, our best isolation defender is Rudy. And the problem is that no one will involve Rudy in what we do. What's so interesting to watch other teams do against us is everybody else in the league runs these actions and runs these switches and these tries to get matchups. No one does that to us. We're still like the ninth, like top 10, top 5 defensive team, even right now in the season, on the pick and roll. Because that's involving Rudy. Where we're struggling is anything in transition, because we're not all back. Spot up shooting where they're breaking us down and kicking out. Isolation one-on-one basketball defensively is really hard for us right now. And who's our best guy? Rudy. So we could really start switching 1 through 5 if we wanted to. But the problem is, no one is going to give us that opportunity because they don't want to involve Rudy. Jonathan Sharks wrote a good piece in The Ringer. He says, the Jazz don't have front court players to switch screens, therefore removing an important defensive counter from their playbook. Right. We don't. And our best defender, who's Royce O'Neale, who gets asked to do this as much as any player in the league, as we've stressed, is not great isolation defender. You can see it. It's not his strength. And so teams then, in turn, can just go right. They don't need to run a lot of actions. They come up fast. They get into their offense. They just attack. One-on-one, early dribble drives, we're scrambling, they're kicking out. It's hard. I don't entirely know what our answer on this is. But Kyrie Irving got where he wanted, and frankly, Elfrid Payton's third quarter is far more disturbing than anything Kyrie Irving did. Because Elfrid Payton just got into the paint every single time in the third quarter. Early. Sometimes off some side pick and rolls, but not a lot of stuff going on there. What's also interesting, though, is I was suspecting that I would find out that teams are running like 20% of their actions against us in isolation, that they're just, it's just what it feels like. It's not true. We're not defending it great, but their teams aren't running a huge amount of action against us in that area. So, you know, a lot of this is pretty fixable, I think, for us if we can figure out how to collectively play defense and not overshift. And find a way to get back to shooters, and the 41% defensive effect three-point shooting number comes back down. I think you'll see that come back down. But we've got to, you know, we've got to guard our yard a little bit. They're driving at us. They're coming at us. The pick and roll defense, frankly, Donovan is probably the one having the toughest time there, at least visually. Honestly, Donovan and Derek have just not clicked on either side of the floor yet. And maybe that substitution pattern where we're not playing them together is going to be really important. Have you watched or listened to Locked On Bets yet? It is our new 10 to 15 minute gambling show. It's super fun, hosted by your boy Q along with Lee Sterling. And it's brought to you by BetOnline.ag. Three wildcard weekend games each day this weekend. So get a free account at BetOnline.ag. Use the promo code LOCKEDON. Get a 50% welcome bonus. And dig into the action with BetOnline, your online sportsbook expert. Don't forget to use that promo code LOCKEDON. Receive 50% welcome bonus to your first deposit. You can visit our friends and exclusive partner at BetOnline_AG on social network or social media to take advantage of the best bonuses in the business. Sign up for a free account. Use that promo code LOCKEDON for your sign-up bonus. BetOnline.ag. It is your home for online sportsbook experts. Bet online, promo code locked on, 50% off. The events of the week and the mob terrorist attack at the Capitol led us once again to our NBA players being in the midst of or taking the lead on social justice, social issues. I'm again wowed and blown away by the work. Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum. Draymond Green. Draymond Green got into a pretty deep level of intricacies that was, you know, not an easy conversation. And media portrayal and things of that nature. So I find myself wowed, one, on, you know, frankly, I've studied this stuff. I was a political science sociology major. I'm 50 years old. Ow. I think I'm pretty well versed. I'm not sure I'd be that comfortable on a moment's notice trying to hold my own in a public spotlight where anything I say incorrectly is going to get just absolutely torched. The burden that now has come upon these players is that every single time there's a moment, they're now expected to speak. And I think they're passing stunningly well. But it's heavy. The world's put them there. They've put themselves there. And now that's their burden. And it also is a tremendous opportunity to leave one of the great legacies that you can find. So I find it fascinating to watch these young men who have not been trained in this to now rise to the occasion. It's pretty wild. Back onto the court last night. What happened? What happened last night? Like, Locked On NBA We'll get it for you, but what happened? Brooklyn beat Philadelphia without Kyrie Irving and without Kevin Durant, right? Philadelphia was like, oh, they're good. Like in my Thursday edition of Locked On NBA with Ben Golliver, it's like, oh, they're good. Are they? What just happened? Like they got smoked. Philadelphia led this game for a minute and spent most of the night down 10. That was not a close basketball game. Cleveland is above 500. We talked about them earlier. They're just forcing a ton of turnovers. They had 18. They forced 18 last night. They're playing their guys a lot of minutes. Everyone's playing their guys a lot of minutes, too. Like the whole thing where Osman played 38, Nance 35, Drummond 38, Isaac Okoro, the rookie, played 39. Dotson, who's a second-year player I kind of like, played 35. But then the crazy thing is Cleveland won without any of their guys last night. No Garland, no Sexton. Now, Memphis doesn't have any of their guys either. They're all, like, I mean, that was. Then, the craziest one of the night, the Dallas-Denver game, which, like, I was really interested in and into and following throughout the night, and then somehow decided that Denver had won. Like, I did. I decided Denver had won and went to dig in, turned everything off, and dug into prep. And then Denver didn't win. I don't know why. It was a pretty close game. I just kind of had that feel. Like Denver had been up by 10 all third quarter. And they were up, I think, 13 at one point in the third quarter. And then Dallas went on that little run to close the third. And I was just like, ah, Denver's all right. Like, they lost in overtime. What happened last night? I don't know. I will actually. Dallas outscored him 15-8. Those two teams are now 4-4 and 3-5, I think, unless the records aren't updated. But that one's, Luka was great again, and Dallas pulls it off. Luka's been, but they need Luka right now to put up 38, 10, and 10 for them to win a game. That's hard. He might be capable, but that's hard. Scarier one is that Jokic had 38 and 11 last night, and they lost. I did worry about Denver this offseason. The same way that they lost a lot of similar like players. And then the Spurs beat the Lakers. 118-109. The same Spurs team. Now they have LaMarcus Aldridge back. But they were terrible against us. And they go beat the Lakers. Yeah, I don't have any idea what's going on. The only thing that makes sense is that Minnesota without Karl-Anthony Towns can't play any defense. What? That doesn't make sense either. Yeah, Minnesota's defensive rating without Karl-Anthony Towns is like a 125. So who knows? I got no idea what's going on in this league. I know that Portland scored like 50 points in the second quarter yesterday. Maybe they were under it, but they were on pace for it. Who knows? Crazy league. Thanks for tuning in. Appreciate you. Have a great weekend. This is Locked On Jazz.